Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
All right, welcome to another very special Pro Football Doc Sports Injury Central podcast. Right now we have guests. Come the regular season, we won't have time for guests. Too many injury things, but this is what I like about the off-season podcast. Although it's kind of in-season now, lots of injury news to break down, and we'll do that in the second half. But more interesting, first half here, very special guest, the great Robert Smith, who I've actually... here and there, known for quite a long time. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
What are you best known as? The Ohio State running back, the Minnesota Vikings running back, the Fox analyst, when someone sees you at the restaurant or the mall, what are you known as?
Not the real Robert Smith. The real Robert Smith is the lead singer of The Cure or the billionaire investor. Wolfman Jack. Did you know that? Wolfman Jack's real name was Robert Smith.
All right. Well, that's interesting. That's quite a collection of Robert Smiths. But, you know, Smith, though, is, look, I shouldn't say the same thing. There's a lot of David Chows out there, too, because Chow is like Smith, right? In Chinese, it's Smith or Jones, right? Different spellings of Chow, but Smith or Jones. But Robert Smith, that's a pretty good collection. You could be the football Robert Smith, the billionaire Robert Smith, Wolfman Jack. And what was the other one? The Cure singer. I don't know which one I'd rather be. You can make a case for Robert Smith, the football player. I mean, you're in there. You'll get some votes.
It always feels good. It depends on where you are. You know, if I'm up in Minnesota, I'm the football player Robert Smith, or at least the Viking Robert Smith. And then if I'm in Ohio, it's the Buckeye Robert Smith. And if I'm in other places, a lot of times, you know, most people know me from seeing me either doing some sort of a football broadcast or something like that.
Yeah. So when we first met, it was in Minnesota. You know, people say Chargers. Look, I spent more time with the Vikings and had a bigger role with the Vikings than probably anyone else on Twitter or social media that claims any team relationships. I only claim the Chargers because I was a head team position. It was 17 years, but I spent time in Minnesota. I was an assistant under Dr. Fisher, right? And he'd done your ACLs and so forth. And you were coming off another ACL and rehabbing and doing real well, even though there was a little bit of muscle atrophy there. But that's actually where you first met.
Actually, Dr. Fisher didn't do my ACLs, though. Okay. My ACL was done by my ACL and my MCL, PCL were both done by Dr. Stedman in Vail.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Anyways, you were rehabbing there, et cetera, and obviously had your share of injuries over time. But I've always wanted – and then we've chatted a couple times since – Twitter, this, that, the other, and your interests are very eclectic. And so I want to give you the open mic in a little bit. But first off, the question is for you. You walked away at a very young age, Barry Sanders age, right? Mm-hmm. At the prime of your career, age 28, poised to get a new deal. Any regrets? And why did you walk away?
No regrets at all. And, you know, when I broke when I tore the ACL in 93, it was my rookie season, December 5th, 1993, up in Detroit. I also did some damage. I broke the bottom of the femur and did some damage to the articular surface. And, you know, for those that have probably listened to you, they know that's that smooth area on the bottom of the bottom of the bone there. And I needed to have a couple microfractures performed, I believe, after 98. And then my last season was the only season I didn't miss any games. And I still needed knee surgery after the year. So I had to have another microfracture after the season was done. And I was just like, you know, it's better to walk away early than to limp away late. You're right. I mean, I had voided the last 2 years of my contract with performance incentives. And I didn't want to be anywhere else. I didn't want to start anywhere else. I knew I probably wouldn't finish out another contract. And I also could have been a 45-year-old knee replacement guy. I didn't have any kids then. Grateful that I do now, 11 and 13. But you know, now I can run around with them to a degree. I can bend down and look at putts, and I'm not so sure that would have been the case if I had played much longer.
Gotcha. So you walked away at a very, you know, financially, obviously it's the wrong decision, but there's more than finances, right? To any decision.
Well, but then again, you know, people would say, is it the wrong decision financially? I would ask this question. If you'd give any amount of money to have your health back, what's the amount of money that's worth losing it? I don't know.
No, it's great. So obviously well ahead of the health and safety era and retirement, you did it there. And nowadays, you know, in theory, you could have gotten another 5-year, $25 million contract. You know, fast forward 20, 30 years, right? Since 93 to 30. Yeah. Fast forward 30 years, 5 years, $25 million. Running back contracts have not kept up with inflation, especially the NFL inflation, right?
No, they certainly haven't. But the game isn't the same as it was then. And I think, you know, when people look at the running back situation in isolation, they're really missing the bigger picture. I mean, you look at what's happened with quarterbacks, and we're talking $40, $50 million a year. We look at defensive ends, the guys that are attacking the quarterback. We look at the guys protecting the quarterback. I mean, it's a passing league. And people that say, yes, the running back position is extremely important, there's no question about that. But the real question is there value in giving that money to one player, or does it make more sense to spread it out among a number of players, not just because of the way that the game has changed, mostly three wide receiver sets, a lot of passing, but because of the higher injury risk factor to just giving the ball to one bell cow, quote unquote, back time and time again. And I think what all people also miss about the NFL system, they'll say, oh, well, it's a salary cap. You know, there are a lot of teams that have salary cap money. Cowboys, one of the most in the league, and they certainly could have gotten a deal done with Tony Pollard if they felt that their value was going to match the value that Tony Pollard wanted. But the thing about the NFL is, if you're saying that running backs are underpaid in this system, then you're essentially saying that other people are overpaid in this system, because unlike baseball, that people seem to think has the greatest system in the world because there's no free agency, they also don't have a salary floor. You look at a team like Oakland, and obviously we know Oakland's going to be moving, and this is part of the reason. You know, there are 11 running backs that are going to make more than any player on the Oakland A's roster this year, and Oakland only has 5 players that make more than $1 million on their active roster right now. They've got a few more uninjured, but what a team in baseball can do, unlike what you can do in football, is just dump salary. You have to keep that money in the locker room in the NFL. Over a 3-year period, 90% of that money from the salary cap has to be spent on the players. So if it's not going to the running back, it's going to the left tackle. It's not going to left tackle, then it's going to a guard. It's not going to a guard, it's going to a defensive end, or it's going to an interior defensive lineman, where we've seen the most growth for salary.
And you make a very good point there. I mean, maybe you should have been a candidate for the NFLPA job, right? That's what people overlook in the CBA and what they've done there. There is that balance. But why do you think this? Okay, so back nowadays, look, even as I was finishing up, LaDainian Tomlinson was great, but he wasn't. There was a transition even during his era away from the three down running back. I mean, it was Darren Sproles at third down, and there were others that came in there too. But nowadays, it's running back by committee is the absolute norm, and there isn't one person. Why? And we know there's a lot of substitutions in other areas. It used to be, right, it was said, no, the single running back needed to stay in the game because they needed to get in the game flow, right? They get going and they get a feel for the game. Now it doesn't. And then if you really think about it, you know, a quarterback, they got to get in the game flow. Well, they're not calling plays anymore. I mean, I often wondered, I mean, there are situationally who potentially is – better in a certain situation. I mean, this is earlier in my career, but even with the Chargers, I mean, third and 10, you'd rather perhaps have Drew Brees, but third and two, would you rather have Doug Flutie, right? I mean, who can run pass or on a 2-point conversion, yeah. Right? I mean, or, you know, the same with other athletes, but the quarterback's been sacrosanct. Your offensive line has still been sacrosanct. But pretty much everyone else or most others, you know, okay, some of the DBs don't come off the field, but they change where they play. It's interesting how the league has morphed, but not for all positions. Like defensive line, pass rush specialist, run, rotation, the whole thing. You never see that on the offensive line, right? Offensive line and quarterback seem to be the sacrosanct ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the rise of analytics and the use of analytics has certainly affected this. And the analogy that I would use, once again, talking about baseball, is wins against replacement, right? If somebody else is in your position and playing your position in a game, does the team have a significantly smaller chance to win without you? I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's how easy it is to replace another player. It's not just, hey, we think he's a good player and he can do great things when he's in there. Like a Saquon Barkley, there's no questioning his talent, his ability, his versatility, all of those things. But the question is, do the Giants still think that they can win without giving him what he wants? And that's what salary negotiations always come down to.
Yeah, no question. And I learned very early on when I first started in with the Chargers, not Vikings, did a little bit with the Bears before the Vikings, but with the Chargers, I was really impressed. Natron Means was our guy, right? Natron Means, a great running back.
Yeah, I remember.
Combination of power and some dancing ability, kind of a Jerome Bettis, maybe a smaller version of Jerome Bettis. But anyways, I used to remember him coming in the locker room on Mondays, could barely walk.
Yeah,
was so sore, right? And that's what I thought about. And you tell me if this analogy holds true. Let's say Robert Smith or Natron Means gets 20 carries in a game. How many hits do you take out of those 20? Forget the blocking and this, that, the other. But on any one play, all right, there might be once you get run out of bounds or twice, but you may hit two or three people on a certain play. So let's just say it's the number of hits, more than one hit on a play, is equal to the number of carries, because there may be a time you go down out of bounds or something, get run out of bounds, et cetera. But those 20 hits, and that would be the minimum in my mind, is by eight other players or nine other players. You're not only are you as a running back on the receiving end of those 20 hits, the person on the delivering end can get a blow too, right? Can be sore too, but it's eight different guys hitting you 20 times, right? Yeah. I mean, so that's the distribution difference where Natron Means, man, and he was tough. He probably took two or three on every given play. So he probably took 40 to 50 by 10 different guys, right? So the other guy's got four or five hits. They're still sore. He's got 40 to 50 in a given game. And that's where the running backs and the health, as you point out, it's a numbers game. It's the amount of time you're the target and the amount of times you get hit, you know, especially if you're running in traffic, you know?
Yeah. And not just the number of hits that you're going to be taking and the amount that you're going to wear down, but how easy is it to bring in another player that can do the same thing? And I know that people talk about the Isaiah Pacheco example, certainly, I believe, a rarity, a seventh rounder. You know, I heard the analogy used earlier. It's like saying you can always find a sixth round quarterback because of the Tom Brady example. Like, you don't want to overdo the analogy, but there are a ton of young backs coming up every single year that can play the position. And you get those guys pass blocking the right way, and they've kind of got everything that they need. I believe that it's the easiest position to make the transition from the college level to the pro level. It's just the nature of the position. Protections aren't that difficult. It's done from depth in the backfield, so you have a little bit of time to figure out who it is that you need to pick up. And that's really the toughest part. The toughest part is figuring out pass protection, because if you can't block for that guy that's the most valuable player on the team, you have a pretty small chance of really getting on the field consistently. But as far as the running schemes go and figuring out where to go on a particular play, aiming points, how do you set things up with defenders, that stays pretty much the same, or at least there are things that you can pick up pretty quickly. But you can plug those guys in pretty fast, and you've got a new batch of guys every year, younger, fresher legs, fewer hits, and that makes it difficult to commit the types of dollars that some of the top end guys want, especially after they've been carrying the ball for 5 or 6 years. And there's another piece of this that I think needs to be mentioned, and that's that the veterans were clamoring for a rookie wage scale. And it's funny because Gene Upshaw always said that he would never agree to a rookie wage scale, because he said, look, they say that they want to pay the rookies less, but it means that they want to pay all of you less. But of course, having the protections in where you have to pay out a certain amount of the salary cap money that a team gets to the players eliminates some of that. But that's what's happening as well. You get a guy, a running back that comes in, signs for 4 or 5 years. And if he's playing during that time, he's taking a lot of hits, a lot of wear and tear. And so doesn't have an opportunity to hit the open market and to really push that value up. And that's what we saw this past season with the franchise tag being applied to Brandon Jacobs, to Tony Pollard, and to Saquon Barkley, three of the top backs that were available as free agents. They never became available, so they were never able to push that envelope. But I think all of those things combined with the fact that the game has changed the way that it has offensively and defensively, that the running back value has gone down the way that it has.
No question. And obviously you meant Josh Jacobs, misspoke. But whatever, it's all good. But I think also, if you look at it, the NFL is such a copycat league. If you really look at the last few big running back contracts, they really didn't work out. Exactly. Todd Gurley and others, right? And so other GMs and teams are not dumb. They're like, nah, we're not going down that path. What do you make of I'm blanking on his name now. The NFLPA president, J.C. Treader. What do you make of his comments related to holding in, et cetera, related to injuries and to get leverage, et cetera?
Well, I mean, that sounds good in principle, but the next guy is ready to step up. And again, it comes down to, are you that much more valuable than the guy that's going to be replacing you? And I think Dalvin Cook in Minnesota are a prime example of this. Nobody would question Dalvin Cook's value to the Minnesota Vikings team and his performance from a year ago, not just in the running game, but in the passing game as well. But they're saying, okay, well, we've got Alexander Madison. We've got Ty Chandler. We've got Dwayne McBride, the rookie that we drafted this past year. We think that as valuable as you are, you're not eight-figure valuable to us. And you could say, well, if he was there, he would have been holding out of practice. They wouldn't even give him that opportunity. They said, you know what? We're just going to cut you. And the greatest value that, or the greatest leverage that any player has is, okay, well, then I'm just going to sit. But if you sit, then they don't have to pay you. And yes, you can talk about faking injuries, whatever the case may be. That's why they don't even want to give those guys an opportunity to come in.
Yeah, no, I get you. And you know, there, of course, there's in all this, there's the integrity question, right? I mean, you could have signed another deal knowing that you weren't going to finish, got some upfront money and, guaranteed money and then said, look, my knees went bad. There's an integrity issue. I get it. But I remember there was a situation, and this is in San Diego, Melvin Gordon. This was San Diego still, I believe. Like Melvin Gordon was holding out and getting fined. He's still on his rookie deal. His deal tolls. He's getting fined. He's not getting paid, and he's not, has no path to free agency. Those are perhaps times you would, quote, hold in. And I guess I would never suggest to a player, you know, fake an injury, right? But there are a lot of times when you're hurting and you say, I can go, or I'm hurting and I can't go. I mean, your back is sore. Well, if I were had my deal, I'd play through this. But now, I mean, faking injuries is a different thing. And I'll be the first to admit here that I have never participated in a player on the field faking an injury. But we have participated in, take a moment here and make sure you're right, because you're out one play anyways. Let's make sure you're back the next play. Or that kind of stuff. That's not faking an injury. I've never participated in faking an injury. Whenever I ran out there, there was a real injury. How bad and how we handled it may have been a different story, but it was never faking an injury. And I guess that's maybe what JC Treader was saying, to accentuate certain injuries as opposed to faking. I don't know. I'd actually be curious to chat with him about that, but it's an interesting concept.
Interesting. But also, do you really think that increases your value? Or do you think that at the end of that teams are just going to say, well, if they're going to do this anyway, then we better pay them more money? Absolutely not. They're going
to
say,
no, well, I get you there. But I mean, you'd have to.
That's it. I mean, you have to think, well, what's your end goal in doing that? Getting some free money on the current deal? Or is it increasing the value of deals overall? Because if you're not going to increase the value of the deals overall, then is it really a successful strategy?
No, I get you. All you'd be doing is taking your franchise tender and starting to collect on the $10 million or whatever it is, right, while you didn't put more wear and tear on your body. But on the back end, you're right. It doesn't make you that valuable. I won't say who. There was a time when there was a player who was poised to do well and had an injury. I won't say who, because I didn't. I'm sure he'd say, fine, I could tell a story, but I don't have a HIPAA permission from him. And I said, well, I think you can finish the season. We can have surgery at the end of the season. And he said, great. Yeah. Cause we're on a playoff run. Let's go. And he came back an hour later and said, I think I'm going to have the surgery and my season's going to end. I'm like, why? I go, you know, I'm not lying to you, right? Like, I think it's safe and you'll make your recovery timeline will be in the off season. And, you know, you can play through. I would tell the other guy the same thing. I'm not trying. He goes, no, I know you are. He goes, but my agent said, you know, I need to be healthy for the start of free agency. And if I put off this surgery at the end of the season, there's an issue. And my response to him was, well, you're a part-time guy now with a lot of potential. Someone's going to pay you to be a full-time guy, 200, 250 carries. You really going to get paid if you can't crack 100 carries and you get injured? Right? Are you really going to get paid? You know, I mean, and he thought about it and he actually finished the season and told his agent no. And it did work out for him, I believe. But, you know, I'm sure there were other things involved too. But you're right. It's how you're playing that sets you up, how you get paid. And if you're sitting, you're not sure, you're no wear and tear on your body. But, you know, it adds extra question marks. And I think sometimes extra question marks in the minds of decision makers, that means we really can't give them the guaranteed money because, you know, there's a, what if there's another shenanigan there down the road, right?
It sounds like it might be effective, but if your overall goal is to increase the value of running backs, you're not really doing it, because if you're sitting out, you're injured, they have somebody else in there, they're performing well. All they're doing is demonstrating that the one back huge salary mentality isn't the way to go, because we have too much risk of he may get hurt anyway, because that's the nature of the running back position. Or if he doesn't feel that the contract is compensating him at the level that he wants, that he's not going to play. So how does that change the strategy of a general manager? It doesn't, and at least in a positive way for the players.
Sure. And this is a perfect transition to the next question for you, because you've done a ton of college work in addition to the NFL, and obviously played very well in college. How does this translate your train of thought to players sitting out bowl games, right? Because, you know, I've often wondered, okay, it's good for your health, but is there a doubt in the GM's mind? Like, okay, well, you're not really there for your team. It's about you and your contract. And obviously we'll get to NIL, but how do you think that translates?
Yeah, and I think it's individual. I think that it just depends on a case-by-case basis. Is it really a player sitting out of a meaningless bowl game, or is it a player sitting out most of the season? I think a lot of people questioned Jackson Smith and Jigba a year ago, and how much did it really hurt him? You still end up being a first rounder, and the people making those evaluations felt that it wasn't significant enough to drop him down into the second round. And so you can say theoretically it's going to impact a team's decision, a general manager's decision, a coach's decision, but the proof is in what they actually do. So I think it's taken case by case and player by player.
I think you're right. And not to pick on Ohio State players or whatever, but you're from Ohio State and whatever. Nick Bosa did it, right? Yeah. Had a core muscle surgery that probably could have come back midseason, and he decided to shut it down. Didn't hurt him at all. I think what happens is when you're the stud star guy, it probably doesn't hurt you at all when you sit out. But if you're a fungible player, like that, I think then more heart comes into it, and how much do you want it? But when you're just the best guy there, then GMs go, oh, it'll be okay. We can overlook that. No one held it against Nick Bosa when he held out this season.
It kind of answers it then, though, because if you're not one of those guys, if you're not one of those top level guys anyway, then you better be playing, because if you don't even know if they have a high enough grade on you, and all you can do is improve your stock by playing. And you know, for me, it was the same situation. I just hadn't played in that many games. I think I played probably in less than 20 college games. Like it was important for me to be out there, to be a part of everything. And it's just my mindset. Like I wouldn't have sat out. That's just the way that I am. But it from a value standpoint for me, it made sense to do everything at the combine and to answer every question, because there were those doubts there. Whether it was commitment to the game or is it a guy that loves football? Well, the only way to demonstrate that is to go out there and play. And it certainly wasn't etched in stone when the season ended that I would be in the first round back in 93, but I ended up being in the first round.
Yeah. Now, of course, in college landscape, the number one thing is NIL. NIL is everywhere. And I don't know if NIL will ever change players' participation in bowl games, because I don't know how it's tied to NIL or otherwise. But NIL, it seems to me like, here's my question to you. Look, there are the haves and have-nots in football, and it already is only a handful of teams that really can win the national championship. And if you continue down this path of NIL, I'm in San Diego. San Diego State has had their issues, right? The Mountain West, Pac-12 fiasco, whatever. They're back in the Mountain West. But is it even feasible anymore to expect San Diego State to ever have a Marshall Faulk again? Because all that potentially will happen is when you get a Marshall Faulk, they're just going to transfer for the millions of dollars somewhere else to one of the big boy schools, and the big boy schools will take them. It sort of almost cements the only certain number of schools can have a chance to win. And to me, the beauty of college basketball is on any given day, okay, you're not expecting that tiny school to go to the Final Four and win it, but then San Diego State did go to the final game this year, but there are upsets to be had throughout the tournament. So I don't know. What do you think about what this is going to do to college football, NIL in general, and where it's going to go and solidifying the group at the top, I think, huh?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and it's a perfect example. And I was at Ohio State when Marshall was at San Diego State. He came out a year later than I did, or a couple of years later. But you're right. You know, those schools may find Marshall Faulks in the future. It's just like you said, though, they're not going to be there for the same, or they're not going to be there for the rest of their time. And what's going to happen is you may have a team like a San Diego State or one of these smaller schools. You know, you look at the teams like Houston and Cincinnati and BYU and UCF that are now headed to the Big 12. They need to get all of those players at once somehow, right? They need to have like a class of freshmen and everybody missed somehow. And try and win it when they've got that entire group together. That's really the only way that that something like that can happen. But yeah, it's just going to make it more difficult to hang on to those guys. It's just the nature of the beast.
Well, you know, my guys and producer said, "What are you going to talk about with Robert Smith?" I said, "I don't know, but there's always good stuff to talk about." But we have these conversations on the phone when we chat. So I was like, I wasn't worried about it. I told you 15, 20 minutes. We're overtime on that. What else do you want to cover? Where do you want to go? What's interesting you? How are the Vikings going to do this week, this year? You pick the topic here.
Oh, wow. I mean, I'm interested to see kind of how it all plays out this season, especially for Minnesota. You know, it seems like Kwesi, the, you know, new GM, you know, kind of shedding all of those players from a year ago, talking about seven starters, you're talking about 41 starts just in the cornerbacks alone, losing Cam Dantzler and Patrick Peterson, Shelley. You know, Chandon Sullivan gone from that secondary. You had so many players gone from that secondary. And then, of course, losing Kendricks at linebacker. You know, we're going to see what's going to happen with Danielle Hunter, who may be a holdout himself, but Za'Darius Smith gone. And then you look at the players gone on offense with Thielen and Cook. You know, it's interesting to me that you would take this strategy right now. And for me, I'm just curious to see how it all works, especially in a year where Aaron Rodgers has gone to New York. And, you know, with Green Bay's luck, you know, they'll probably have three straight Hall of Famers, right, at quarterback. And Jordan Love's going to end up being a Hall of Fame player as well. But in all seriousness, I mean, the NFC North, I mean, it looks like Detroit's really to lose at this point in the season. But that's why we're at this point of the season, you know. You talk about the injuries and the significance of injuries. Gardner Johnson went down with an injury today. So, you know, and he was looked at to be a key piece of a secondary that needed to improve for Detroit. And who knows how that's going to end up now. So,
yeah, the early news is they said, quote, no structural damage, but okay. That's injury reporting. So what we do at our site, as you probably know, Robert, Sports Injury Central, we don't do injury reporting. We do injury analysis. We want to look at the video of CJ Gardner's play and see how he runs afterwards and do analysis as opposed to take it at its word. But at least the early word is good. I will tell you that last year, our site, we were really high on the Vikings. We said, take the Vikings at plus 240 to win the division. A lot of value there. And we took the over wins on the Vikings and under wins on the Packers. And it really comes down to injuries. That's what we look at. No GM fields a squad that they think is inferior. If they're losing guys to injury or projecting guys to be there and they're not there for injury, nobody signs up a team that doesn't look good on paper, right? But that's why we hated the Packers last year, because we're like, the left tackle Bakhtiari isn't going to be ready. The right tackle's got issues. And how do you steer protection? That's a nightmare when you have the bookends gone and then you get cluster injuries. And yeah, it worked out for us. We don't have as strong an opinion yet this year on the preseason for the NFC North, but we do have individual team preseason injury previews, and we do break it down to some of the losses that you say, et cetera. But we focus more on injuries and depth and on the hidden positions, you know, the nickel and dime corner, which matter, and the offensive linemen that matter, not just on the star running back or wide receiver, et cetera. Robert, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Anytime I can return the favor, please do. Unless anything else you want to do, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back with the second part, which we'll make you free of. You got a busy life and schedule. I appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Doc. Always great to talk to you.
All right, welcome back to part two of this week's Pro Football Doc Sports Injury Central podcast. Robert Smith is fun. He's an intelligent guy. I like chatting with him. I don't know. I guess it's a good thing that I always say 15 minutes or so, and we always go 30, right? Because I think we're just chatting, and it's all good there. Welcome to the show. Jacob's been here, and Taylor is here. One thing I want to lead off this part of the podcast with is an apology to our mental health podcast guys, Anthony Servino and his partner. What is his name again? Michael?
Half, I believe you say.
Yeah. Last. Apologies, guys. I really didn't mean to. I don't know. I guess, first of all, that's why I know myself when you're talking about weekends. That's how I was like, Taylor, or you, or how those guys text me a reminder. But I don't know that that would have done it yesterday. We had a little mini fiasco, and I'll show you guys here, or maybe Alex will cut it into the podcast. Know that I'm not crazy. We got to know nice CHP officer yesterday. Wow. On the side of the road there. And no, I didn't do anything wrong. I wasn't evading the law. I wasn't speeding. We didn't get into an accident. I'm driving along and we're in a section. We went to a mini trip. So there's, you know, we went to Savannah Bananas and this lake place, and they played Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. So that's drivable from here.
Right.
I just figured it's, you know, as far, it was 2+ hours, but so we stayed a little bit up that way along the lake. I figured it's way more convenient than going to Savannah, Georgia. And of course, you know, so right. Anyways,
yeah,
the kids went Savannah Bananas, blah, blah, blah. On the way home the next morning, I'm driving and my car also says air pressure low, pull over immediately, you know, this, that, the other. And like, well, pull over where and how low, right? Car seemed to be still driving, but switched to the right lane. And I don't know if you could tell with that picture, there was those construction blocks. It was a 5-lane highway already down to 3, and there was no shoulder on the road. And so all of a sudden the tires started like not like there was like no air, and like literally I was going 2 miles an hour.
Oh wow.
Like you hear the grinding of the rims, right? But the last thing I want is someone to run in the back of me with the kids and right. Everybody. So put on the hazards and whatever, like you can't really drive anywhere. You can't really get to the middle shoulder, which is like 2 lanes of higher speed traffic. The car's barely going. The exit's like 3/4 of a mile away. I'm like, we're not going to make this exit, yeah. You know, with this car. And so my wife was there and good. We said, look, just got the flashers on. A car had stopped behind us. So we were pseudo safe. We said, get out, just put the kids on the side of the road, but across the barrier, right?
Right.
And then my daughter, God bless her, was all crying. Oh, dad's still in the car. I'm like, okay, I better get out. And then I was going to go out the driver's side. No, no, don't go out the driver's side. You got to go out the passenger side. So now I'm crawling through the car, you know, Mr. Nimble, you know, old guy. Get out. And there was a van, kind of a motorhome behind it. You know, they're pulling something. They were nice. My wife jumped out, waved at him, said, look, can you just stay here a second until we vacate, you know, and then slowly. So they were good. And we called Highway Patrol and the tow truck and the da da da. But it was a little bit of a ordeal fiasco. But the amazing thing is, as nice as that one guy was, there were 3 or 4 people after we got out yelling as they went by, you can't park here. I'm like, you think I actually parked here? I mean, you can really see like the wheels off the tire off the rim of the car on the back. I mean, the car's canted sideways.
That's like some new social media thing. They saw a video of someone yell that. So that's probably why.
Oh, is it? Yeah. It's like, you can't park. Yeah. I mean, you think I wanted to park? The car didn't go anywhere. Anyways, long apology. Anthony Servino, Michael, sorry. I hate to be unreliable. I didn't even think about it during that time. In theory, we were supposed to be home. And then I had half an hour, and you know, with that fiasco, I didn't even know it till later in the day that I missed right. It. So I apologize there, and I'll make it up to you guys however I can. All right, what do we got for the next? And I really like that podcast. I've enjoyed that mental health podcast.
I've been your third year in a row. You do like it.
I mean, those are good guys, and I think it's necessary to talk about the mental health side, and you know, I didn't know where I was going to go this year, wherever they wanted to, but maybe more positive messages, since it seemed like some of my other ones were like more about realizing the reality of mental health.
Right.
But whatever. Well, maybe we'll get on with them another time if they're not hating me. So, Michael Anthony, I apologize. All right. What else do we got here?
Plenty of training camp news. I mean, it just opened for, I think, vets report tomorrow, but still some early action. Got a kind of a weird one with Naeem Hines. Apparently, he's out for the season, knee injury. And then details came out later that he was actually on a jet ski. I don't know where, but got run into by another jet skier while he's sitting there stationary and was diagnosed with a torn ACL. So,
well, look, there's no video. We wish Naeem Hines the best. I mean, this is tragic in a lot of ways, because unless the Bills are trying to be, super nice to him, and he just joined them last year, so I don't know if they have a reason to be.
Right.
This is NFI. This is non-football injury. This is you don't get paid, right? Now, who knows what he's got in his contract and what have you.
Right.
But then he's got to deal with the injury too. On the other side, you always say we're injury analysis, right, guys? Not injury reporting. The reports are, I believe him, jet ski. I mean, Tom Pelissero, right, very reliable friend of the show and Sports Injury Central, et cetera. Don't doubt that one bit. The fact that he was stationary, don't doubt that one bit. Don't doubt that reporting. Don't doubt the reporting that it's ACL now. When it first came out that he was stationary, got hit, I thought it was like someone slammed into his knee and you're talking tibial plateau fracture or something like that. But this one, if he tore his ACL, seems more non-contact in nature, which I guess is good, because you have to assume, I can't assume, I guess. I mean, chances are not unreasonable that it was somebody he knew.
Right.
Not that it was purposeful, obviously, but right, just, you know,
you're in a group of people. And,
and, you know, you may not be knowing how to drive. I mean, how many times have I, look, I've seen it before when I've gone skiing with the family and someone trying to be funny, trying to spray snow on someone as you're stopped there, and they come a little too close, a little too, you know, a little whatever, by accident, and no one's really hurt. But, you know, there's no brakes on a jet ski, right? No. I mean, so, and here's the other thing. I'm wondering what really happened. I mean, I don't doubt Pelissero's reporting that he was stationary, but I would also assume, once again, making an ass out of you and me, assume that it was probably a wave runner rather than a jet ski. There aren't that many jet skis out there anymore. Jet skis are the old school where you're standing on a little, the jet ski, wave runner is what everyone is on. Right. You had to be standing. And maybe he was waiting for his friend or somebody, because that's how then the base moves. And it's very, very, very unlucky. It's because the wave runner moves, although the wave runner is pretty big. If your foot is planted, we all know that's how you tear your ACL. Now, maybe he had, you know, some sort of rubber shoes on that let him be planted while standing on the wave runner, and he got hit, and then this is, thus his knee was stuck to the ground. Maybe it's possible. Bare feet would be harder. He had to be really be standing, not sitting. Right. You know, it seems like a very unusual injury. For example, very few people, I'm in San Diego, tear their ACL surfing because the board isn't stable.
Yeah.
You do tear your ACL surfing, you jump off the wave and you're in shallow water and you don't, and you land and your foot sticks and whatever. But actually on a board is very uncommon. I mean, you go back to skiing again, you tear your ACL when your bindings stay on. When your bindings release poor footing, you don't tear your ACL in general. Okay. So, but maybe this was like a, and you can tear your ACL. I've seen it a lot of times in line getting on and off the ski lift. So maybe this was a jet ski wave runner type thing that way. But I don't know. The bottom line is it's still a lot of bad luck. I guess that's my point of view. It's probably your friend or someone and you're having fun. It didn't, hopefully you weren't doing anything dangerous. No reason to think that it was. And the friend, assuming it was, probably feels really bad. And it was just a bad set of circumstances. And even with that, I think it's very unusual to tear your ACL in a wave runner, but not impossible. So all the stars aligned in a very negative way for poor Nyheim Hines.
I didn't think you had water sports injury analysis there, Doc. That was impressive to put all those circumstances together.
If we do hot dog eating contests, we've been good at those, you know.
Yeah.
Joey Chestnut, that was a give me under 2 years ago. That was, so we've done, like, always medical related, and we try and do some analysis. The bottom line is, we wish them the best. Don't know the circumstances of how it happened, but it seems like a lot of bad stars aligned there. Just like a lot of bad stars kind of aligned, but it ended up with a good ending. It, you know, cost some money, and I still got to get my car fixed because now the suspension and who knows.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da. It's going to cost a lot of money, but we're just trying to get off the highway. There was no shoulder.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, would never try and, first of all, it was beyond changing a flat tire, and I wouldn't be,
right.
My car doesn't even have a,
you don't have a spare?
No, it doesn't come with one. I guess I didn't upgrade. No, it doesn't come with one. But anyways, and by the way, the tow truck has to be a flatbed tow truck because, you know, I don't know, whatever the technical reasons. I was just trying to get the kids somewhere safe, and I didn't want them on the side of the road, but figured, safe would be across that concrete block median. And not only for us, but like if cars are still speeding by, I mean, then and cars are trying to change lanes out of our lane. I mean, that's an accident for someone else waiting to happen. So
no, definitely.
We were just trying to be, you know, whatever. The bad set of circumstances, it was during a part of the highway with no shoulder and all the construction.
Right.
But it could have been worse. It could have been the night before at night, on the way back from Savannah. Yeah, Banana.
Trying to come back.
So, I mean, Nyheim, it could have been worse, I guess. You know, there's always a worse scenario. You've been on a lot of bad luck there. Anyways, enough of water sports analysis. We were doing water sports this weekend.
I bet. Warm out there, so good. Smart to get in the water. A little better circumstances for the Lions, it looks like, early on at least. There's a bit of a scare this morning. CJ Gardner-Johnson reportedly went down non-contact, was carted off, but the initial imaging they got back showed no structural damage. At least that's the report. So it seems more of a day-to-day. He's going to miss some camp time, but should be ready for the start of season. So that's
hopefully that holds true. Anytime you hear non-contact, look, 50% of teams go into the season with an injury before week one, right? Then this is the season. There's a few that happen in OTAs and in mini camps, but anyways, that's what you're trying to stay away from. The other big news right now is all the camp reportings. PUP. Yes, PUP, no PUP. Does it really matter that much? Look, we've said all along, Breece Hall, we don't think he's all the way there yet and will be a struggle early on. The PUP doesn't surprise us. We expect it. We would not be shocked with the PUP going to reserve PUP for the regular season, missing 6 weeks. We would not be surprised. But it's too early to say, see, told you so, PUP, Breece Hall. All it means is, you know, he can come off any day, any time. It just means there's something going on there. Same with the Bengals. Our preseason injury preview, the two big worries there, Ouzie coming off his ACL, and he's PUP right now. And Lael Collins at right tackle, and he's PUP right now. And this is why they're flipping over Jonah Williams to the right side. He's coming off his own injury. That's why they signed a new left tackle, etc. All this is in preseason injury preview, and that's out basically now. Go to the website, sportsinjurycentralsicscore.com, and we're putting all that stuff out, videos, information, and there's a report that you can have that's like a mini book, or really a book that you all put together of all these things. And that's what we referred to last year, earlier in this podcast, with saying take the Vikings for the NFC North. It was really based on the preseason injury preview with the offensive line issues with the Packers last year. And it was Packers under, Vikings over, and Vikings plus 240 to win the division. Not always nuggets every year for every division, but certain divisions, there are some nuggets in there. So I would go get that. But one more thing, even though we are covering, right, who's on PUP, who's not, and who's coming off, I wouldn't make too much of who is on PUP and who is not. Let's take Kyler Murray, for instance. I don't think there's been a camp yet. There's no report of PUP or not. I could see it either way. We're very firm saying Kyler Murray is nowhere near 100%. What was the team-produced special that he was on?
Yeah, it was the Cardinals flight path.
Flight path.
Followed his ACL recovery. They put it out a week ago, week and a half, something like that. So,
look, unless him throwing a ball to his dad and otherwise was much earlier in the process, he doesn't look close to ready.
No, right. He wasn't stepping to throws, wasn't even using the right leg too much. So,
and I don't think he was close to ready as a pocket quarterback.
Right.
Although we've said all along he could be ready as a pocket quarterback, a la Joe Burrow, a la Phillip Rivers in the past, et cetera, but not as a mobile run pass guy. That's why we have our six score for him really low at 38. In other words, if you're expecting a 4,000-yard season, you got to expect 38% of it based on missing time and or less than 100%, right, or whatever your fantasy scoring and draft stuff that you want to say. But it, and I'm not hedging here, and this I will have to say was brought up by Howard Balzer. He says, you think it's possible, and one school of thinking is Kyler Murray won't be on PUP. And there's a couple reasons for him not to be on PUP to start training camp. Number one, from a marketing perspective, Flight Path already put out quotes from Kyler Murray that said, the goal is week one. We're headed towards that goal. This is what we're trying to do. Nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Guarantee, will he make it? I don't know. I've said all along, he's more likely to miss the entire season than he is to be ready and 100% week one. And the reason why I say that is that contractually, first of all, if he's more of a pocket guy, do you want him? If he's not 100% mobile, do Cardinals fans want him? Not because of quality, but also you don't want him to get hurt in other ways, right, if he's not escapable. And Kyler Murray's not a tall guy. Is a pocket guy going to work for him? And guess what? He's had no offseason program to learn a new offense, new OC, new coaches, everything. He's had no chance to do that. So can't you see a scenario where, let's say, he's getting close to ready to go 6-8 weeks, or he's ready to go at 10 weeks. But if the Cardinals are 1-whatever or 2-whatever, are you potentially better off just getting him to 100% and letting him sit the rest of the way? Too early to make that decision, but that's why I say that. But don't think I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here. Howard Balzer brought this up, and I said, well, yeah, I could see this. He said, what do you think about the idea that they would not put Kyler Murray on PUP to start training camp? The reason why that could make sense is not necessarily signaling his health. That's part of it, that maybe they think he's closer than some of us think, but that doesn't mean he's 100%. You don't have to be 100% to pass a physical, okay? To pass a physical and not be on PUP, you do not have to be 100%. You have to be cleared to do football activities, or at least some football activities. And it's the team that decides whether you're on PUP or not.
Jimmy G comes to mind. He cleared the physical so he can be under center at training camp and stuff like that. So,
right.
And whether he's just doing hands offs, we'll see.
We'll see. Right. And on Jimmy G, we said all along that, yeah, there's worry because you heard the late stories about needing the foot surgery, but we didn't expect it to leak into the season. And so he's not on PUP. But the reason for Kyler Murray to not be on PUP is that if you're on PUP, you cannot practice at all with the team. And maybe it's important for Kyler Murray, from leadership, new teammates, coaches, et cetera, scheme. Okay, maybe he's not going to be 100%, but maybe it's important to take some 5- and 7-step drops in the pocket. Maybe it's important to learn some reads and calls at the line of scrimmage. Maybe that's important for Kyler Murray, given new coaches. But you just obviously red jersey, no one's going to touch him. You're not going to have him run and scramble or do anything. So yeah, not talking out of both sides of her mouth here, but that's why a team might leave Kyler Murray off of PUP, and give Howard Balzer some credit for bringing up that topic. But that's possible that they could do that. So a team makes all these decisions in different ways. So let's not read too much. And, you know, we're going to give you our interpretation of what PUP means and doesn't for certain players. But I don't know that we're changing anything if a player is on PUP or isn't on PUP. Javonte Williams is not on PUP right now. And of course, it's the short version, the active PUP, where they count against a 90 man. He could come off any day if you were even on it. But maybe the Broncos felt like, look, let's see what he can do. New coaching staff, same thing. We don't have to put him through all the rigors. We want him practicing with the team some, which he hasn't been yet, all OTAs. Look, I'd love to see new video of him running very well, but the latest video from a couple weeks ago, he wasn't close yet to 100%. Hopefully he's made some progress. So don't read too much into PUP one way or the other right. now. Because that status can change just like that. A player on PUP can come off and be fine. And a player who doesn't make it to PUP, there are still reasons. We have not changed our six score on Javonte Williams yet. We still think it's more J.K. Dobbins last season. He's the J.K. Dobbins of this season still in our mind. But hopefully that explains it a little bit.
Yeah, you can head to the website for all the latest sick insights. We've been releasing snippets of our preseason preview, but we also got some fantasy articles as well. I know we pointed to Samaj P. Ryan as a potential Javonte Williams option behind Javonte Williams that could get more work early in the season. I want to jump to baseball real quick. We have baseball insights up today as well. Reports that Aaron Judge is taking BP now kind of fits our timeline. You always said if he makes it back before August, it'd be great news. So it seems like he's on track for beginning of August.
Yeah, it's good to hear. And fantasy-wise, you guys wanted to go over, I don't know why you want to look at me for fantasy thinking, but Scott Fishbowl 13, their draft is still going on. We're around, 17 or something? Anyways, we can do that next week. Aaron Judge, he hasn't been out in the outfield because he can't run around. So why can't he just DH and hit bombs? Because it's back foot. Get up on that big toe, the turf toe. Some BP is good. I haven't seen the video. Is it full swing BP or is it meet the ball, make contact BP?
I'm sure they scrubbed the internet of that video. So
at this point, look, I think we were the first to say he's not coming back for the All-Star game until after the All-Star break. And that was turned out to be easy. And then with the reports of not being in the field, we said, August. And the question is, when in August? First week, first few days, or late? But we were always on record saying he'd be back this season. It's just a matter of when.
Right.
It's just they're in last place right now. I know they're 6 games above 500, but wild card, they're 2 games out. Like, there's a certain point that, like you said, how late in August is too late, right? Like,
late enough for our sick pick subscribers to hit their second half futures, right? Yes. I know that was one of Yankees was one of the unders because of Aaron Judge.
For sure.
And we had a few of those. So as long as our sick picks subscribers are happy, then look, I hope the Yankees do well. I hope Aaron Judge comes back. But so far, you know, that future second half pick is looking pretty good based on some of the injury things.
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter as well for the latest content. We might even have a pre-trade deadline MLB preview for which teams have some injury holes that they might be looking to plug or candidates for moving on the deadline.
And for baseball, a lot of sleeper stuff now, prize picks, underdog type stuff. Use the SIC code for the $300 matching. And we put out some good content, I think. I mean, I've played with it, but I just do the injury analysis. The rest of the team does the picks based off of it. And especially when combined with the special sale or freebie stuff or the reduced lines, you guys are killing it whenever you do that line. It's not 100%, but whenever you can hit, you know, 2-3-4-way parlays at over 50%, I mean, that's pretty good. Bang for the buck. You got the Taco Tuesday picks on Prize Picks. You've got the sleeper specials. And check out the website and get all that stuff. Thanks for watching and listening. Next week, we'll, I like last week's Robert Smith was awesome. I like last week's Joe Thomas. I think it's Hall of Fame season.
Yeah.
Let's try and find another Hall of Famer to get on here and talk some football since it's Hall of Fame season. It's the first game. Anyways, thanks for listening and watching Pro Football Doc Sports Injury Central podcast. And we'll see you next week or all week on Twitter.